Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Ann Myers, registration number 9870. I'm here this morning representing the city of Littleton with regard to the workers' compensation claims of Jeff Crist. We're here really on a matter of statutory interpretation concerning section 841-209. Mr. Crist was employed as a firefighter by the city of Littleton. He filed a claim for workers' compensation benefits arising out of a diagnosis that he unfortunately suffered of glioblastoma multiforme, a specific form of brain cancer. He alleged that he suffered this brain cancer as a result of exposures to specific substances, including arsenic, asbestos, benzene, benzoapyrene, formaldehyde, and the contents of soot. Mr. Crist alleged in proceedings below that he should be allowed the advantages of Section 841-209, which provides a presumption for certain cancers suffered by firefighters and allows them the protection of a statutory presumption. That is, that those certain cancers are deemed work-related except under certain circumstances. The statute very specifically allows the employer to rebut that presumption. And it should be noted from the outset that, of course, it is not an automatic entitlement of benefits for these firefighters who suffer from particular forms of cancer. It is not a strict liability statute. It allows a very clear means for an employer to overcome the presumption. And that means is set out in the statute, and it is very clear. It allows the employer to overcome the presumption by showing by a preponderance of the medical evidence that the condition did not occur on the job. That's the pure and simple language of the statute. There's no further limitation, explanation, or restriction. Now, in the proceedings below, Judge Jones heard the evidence. There were a number of medical experts, and she found that the city did rebut the presumption by showing by a preponderance of medical evidence that Mr. Crist's cancer was not related to his employment. She found specifically that Dr. Damick, Dr. Waxman, and Dr. Buffler were reliable and credible in their testimony, and found that those experts agreed that the exposures to these specific substances identified by Mr. Crist in the proceedings below did not cause his specific diagnosis of glioblastoma multiforme. Not only did the ALJ find that the city's experts were credible and reliable, but she went on to make specific findings concerning the experts called by the claimant, Mr. Crist. She found those experts to be not reliable and incredible, and went beyond that to say that their well-intentioned bias in support of firefighters supplanted any scientific basis for their opinions.
Ms. Myers, does your evidence in effect then say that there's no scientific basis for the presumption established by the General Assembly?
That certainly has been the position of the claimant throughout these proceedings, Your Honor. In fact, my experts never approached the issue of the validity of the statute at the time of the hearing until that testimony was elicited by counsel for Mr. Crist. It was our position that the very specific facts of Mr. Crist's case, the very specific diagnosis of cancer that he suffered, was not caused by his exposures to very specific substances in the workplace.
Counsel, in your view, would it have been necessary for the claimant to allege that his cancer was caused by exposure to those substances? Wouldn't he be entitled to rely on the presumption that it was caused by something that has to do with his occupation as a firefighter, and leave it to you to rebut that presumption?
I suppose that he could have done that, Your Honor. In this case, his experts chose to identify specific substances that he was exposed to, and my experts in turn relied upon that interpretation so that they could specifically rebut that testimony and that evidence.
And was the effect of your experts' testimony that we don't know what causes this, so it's probably, it's no more likely to be the job than anything else?
My experts had to admit that medical science does not know the cause of glioblastoma, but more specifically, these specific substances that Mr. Crist was exposed to do not reach the brain. There is a specific physiology of this kind of brain cancer that these substances, if inhaled or if dermally transmitted, do not reach the brain. That specific medical knowledge was imparted by the city's experts at the time of the hearing. So this is a matter of causality, as testified by Dr. Waxman. And as you know from the record, he was qualified as a level 2 accredited toxicologist who is well-versed in the causality analysis that's required under the workers' compensation statute, the level 2 curriculum. Those causality criteria, very specific causality criteria, there was no way that that criteria could be met in this case because of the specific physiology of the cancer involved and the exposure to the substances involved.
Excuse me, that we have a difficulty here because it may be that, at least as applied to glioblastoma, that the presumption is just not scientifically valid, and yet it is legally valid. And so that's the difficulty I think we have here, is that, you know, the question is whether valid observations about the absence of information about causality, about, well, we don't know what causes this. I don't know that that really gets you into the end zone in terms of rebutting this statutory presumption.
And, Your Honor, I think because of that, we have to go back to the very words of the statute. We can't read anything into them. And just because, as the case law has held, just because the import of those words may not promote the policy that was stated in the law doesn't mean that we get to ignore those words. The words have to be strictly interpreted. The ICAP has not found them to be ambiguous. The ICAP has said that the plain and ordinary meaning of these words has to be applied. So according to the case law, then we are left with those words, even if in the court's view that doesn't promote the purpose of the General Assembly as stated in that statute.
Well, I agree with that. But how does that help you if in fact the essentially the presumption creates a causal connection in favor of the firefighter in the absence of, you know, if the evidence is uncertain?
Because, Your Honor, I believe that the words of the statute do help us. And I think if you look at the ICAP brief, you can see that they really ended up promoting and asserting the very thing that we proved in our rebuttal of the presumption. You can see that they said, we have to prove that the cancer cannot be attributed to the occupation. That's the bottom page 7 of their brief. They said, we have to utilize medical evidence which relates to each specific claimant. We did that. They said that the legislature intended to award benefits to firefighters absent proof that the cancers are not causally related to the employment. Those are the words of the ICAP in terms of how these words should be interpreted. We met all of those statements. We fulfilled that burden. We showed through our medical evidence that this was not the result. These exposures did not cause Mr. Crisp's brain cancer. So according to the interpretation even promoted by the ICAP, we did meet the criteria set out by the very definite, clear, plain, and unambiguous words of the statute.
Counsel, directing your attention to the statutory history, my understanding is that Senator Fitzgerald, who was instrumental in getting this legislation passed through, I gave an example in her view of how you could prove your burden, and that she was talking about the employer, for instance, going to an outside source, like a paint store, to show that the employee on the side or in a different job or a different point in his or her life had worked in a paint store and may have contracted the brain cancer that way, for instance. Is that the kind of burden of proof that's being required of the employer, insurance companies, in this context under this statute?
No, Your Honor, I believe that's one way to rebut the presumption, but that is not the only way to rebut the presumption under the clear language of the statute. And this goes back to the General Assembly could have included language that said the employer must prove an alternate cause of his cancer, of the firefighter's cancer, before that statutory presumption can be rebutted. The General Assembly did not choose to do that. They did not choose to do a lot of the things that the proponents of the statute urged. One of the senators said this should be an automatic entitlement to workers' compensation benefits for these kinds of cancers. That clearly is not what the statute does. And the legislative history, of course, is according to the case law, not relevant if the words of the statute are plain and ordinary and unambiguous, which the ICAP has said that they are. So, Your Honors, I would like to reserve my remaining time if I could. Thank you very much.
Good morning, members of the panel. My name is Neil O'Toole, and my number is 9887. I am arguing for and with Ms. Katie Allison, who's asked me to give the oral argument because I presented the case on appeal. Her number is 39430. She appears from the Attorney General's office. One of the interesting parts of this case, as it developed actually through the testimony that took place before the legislature and the testimony that took place through the hearing, it seems to be the general agreement, which is found and stated as such in the brief of the respondents, that of course there is no proof of actual cause of cancer. According to their statement, something we agree with, it's impossible. So that then shifts whether by preponderance of the evidence you can show that there is no exposure. Are there firefighters who may not have had exposure? Probably it's highly unlikely. I had a recent case involving a firefighter in which that firefighter moved from one, which is very common, by the way, moving from one district to the other. Firefighter was in Westminster for many, many years, and then moved up to Red, White, and Blue, which is up around Breckenridge, Frisco area. Strangely enough, he was a trainer. Strangely enough, they only use gas, natural gas, in their training. He, in the 4 years he was up there, never went out on a fire. He was diagnosed with cancer while a firefighter at Red, White, and Blue. And what happened was they were Red, White, and Blue was able to show. City of Westminster carries the burden on this one. It was a cancer which was covered under the presumption phase. If you look at the reports of Dr. Danick, Dr. Waxman, Dr. Buffler, the statements are essentially the same. One, available epidemiological data do not support a conclusion that GBM, glioblastoma, medical, or any form of brain cancer is caused by the occupation exposure to chemicals. Well, all right. The legislature had that testimony before it from Dr. Waxman, rejected it. Said, we're making a social policy decision. Firefighters place their lives on the line. We're going to give them an extra protection that benefits them. Same thing with Dr. Damick. While there's ample evidence that firefighters are exposed to carcinogens, there doesn't seem to be any disagreement in that. In their work, and you know, I didn't give you a cite there, but on that Buffalo, that's page 11 of her report, and I have the this thing, whatever that is, but anyway, in page 4 of Dr. Damick's report, are exposed to carcinogens in their work environment despite the use of protective equipment, which is, you know, interesting because over time, and that's what's shown through this evidence, is the protective equipment's gotten better. The use of it is more frequent. I think our Chief Chris testified that he, you know, there was a period of time when they did what's called the overhaul phase after they had suppressed the fire. They weren't using any equipment. They'd walk around as t-shirts. It showed a macho sense. But anyway, that's changed. He said, well, there's no evidence that the identified carcinogens target the brain. Same as what Ms. Meyer was arguing. And what she argued at trial, what Judge Jones lighted on when she made her decision. And then finally, we have the opinions of Dr. Waxman. There's no solid and unequivocal evidence supporting the assertion that Mr. Chris's disease is causally related to his work as a firefighter. Now, the problem is, you know, we don't have a lot of experience with these types of presumptions. In fact, we only have one that I know about in the workers' comp, and maybe another or two, but one has to relate to HIV, if you've had the testing and so on. So there's a series of, I shouldn't say threshold issues, which have to be addressed, none of which appear to be part of this appeal. But, you know, if you look at the statute in North Dakota, case law, where this whole area of the scientific evidence, the dispute between legislative and scientific opinion, is to be determined by the judiciary. You'll see that that statute, and this, by the way, is quoted at length, the statute is in the Robertson case, which I quoted in North Dakota. So it's a very similar to our statute. Not at all, there's a little more threshold issues that are difficult to let the fire department and so on and so forth. But moral short, it is they look at this and say, look, there may be a dispute, as there frequently is in medical areas. This dispute can be rather profound. It can change. I think we find out after years of being warned about consumption of coffee, 3 weeks ago we're told, hey, that'll help you avoid prostate cancer. Right? And this is new. However, they say, wait a second, but it may affect blood pressure. Well, now we've got a whole complex of things. Well, you know, all of those issues were brought before the legislature.
Mr. O'Toole?
Yes, John.
We need to read the statute as written. We need to apply the words of the statute, and it establishes a rebuttal. It appears to establish a rebuttable presumption.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way that I would typically interpret a presumption is that the claimant is not, is if the claimant can show the requirements to earn the presumption, that is a certain amount of time as a firefighter, etc., then the firefighter need not present evidence that the particular exposure created the cancer, caused the cancer. Then that burden shifts very clearly in the statute. The burden then shifts to the employer to show that the cancer did not result. Why is it that the employer can't prove that this particular cancer under no circumstances can result? In other words,
the legislature has made a determination that these cancers are all presumptively arise as a result of the work of a firefighter. And it's not enough to say that the legislature, which is essentially what was argued here, mm-hmm. was wrong. But and that's what the argument is. There was no scientific basis for the presumption that these cancers mm-hmm. are related to firefighting. Now, of course, there was evidence in this case, and of course, I didn't just rely on bald assertions. I put in medical evidence because I knew that a judge would want to be taught about these things, that there should be some education. So I did have evidence to the issue of causation from two medical doctors. All right. But it wasn't rebutted by a statement that we, members of the scientific community, know more than the legislature on this issue. When the legislature has made a decision from a social policy perspective to protect individuals who put their lives at stake for us.
So what would it take then? What would it take then to rebut the presumption? And you've already alluded to this.
Yeah, just when you brought up, a point that Judge Fitzgerald, I'm now confusing senators and judges and doctors, and Senator Fitzgerald brought up. You look at the situation, and interestingly, the case cited by the respondents, the Burroughs case, again, another North Dakota case. Here's a guy that's been smoking a pack and a half of cigarettes for X number of years. He's 50 times more likely to have had his lung cancer, which is a small cell lung cancer, which he's suffering from the result of that particular exposure than firefighting. Right? Or you might even have, let's say you have, these skin cancers, this case in Colorado is a real trip, because what happens is, you know, the firefighters, a lot of them are accustomed to now wearing sunscreen. When I was exposed to the sun, I didn't use sunscreen. There's a result right there, but here, because we know that. But let's say the same firefighter who develops a basal cell carcinoma, which is known to have been, come from exposure to the sun. Not only is working as a firefighter, but he goes to a tanning salon every day.
Or he's a lifeguard or something.
Or he's a lifeguard. He has another, yeah, I mean, so your lifeguard would be interesting because it,
you know, the question is...
So you have, you're suggesting that there's, that one could rebut this by showing alternative causation.
In fact, I believe that the case that respondents would rely on, Ida Burrows' case, is the case.
Well, here's my question. Here's my question. Why didn't they, as a practical matter, do that? They don't necessarily need to identify the alternative causation. Isn't it enough that they just said it's probably not the items that are, that the, it's probably not the firefighters' exposure to these chemicals? And doesn't then that just implicitly or inferentially create the view that it's probably something else?
No.
No.
Because the legislature has said, wait a second, we're presuming, and you know, all the studies they rely on, the legislature study, they said that firefighters are exposed to these chemicals. And now, they're saying, if you're going to say that the legislature was wrong to impose this presumption, then you're just elevating a scientific view over a legislative view.
Well, no, with respect, let me disagree with you. Let me just say that if the employer presents evidence that the cancer was unlikely to have been caused by exposure to these various chemicals, doesn't that inferentially support a conclusion by preponderance of the medical evidence that such condition or impairment did not occur on the job? Doesn't that suggest inferentially that it was probably caused by some yet undetermined, unidentified causation?
Well, I would say that, again, it would gut the presumption, but leaving that aside, but if it does, is an unidentified speculative cause the equivalent of a preponderance evidence? I would say no. I mean, that's my, our position in this case, because if you cannot establish an alternate cause, I mean, it's similar to what goes on in a workers' compensation claim all the time, where the claimant bears the burden of proof. And then, if they don't meet their burden of proof, then that's the end of the game, right? Then the respondents, win the case. There's no summary judgment. Well, there could be summary judgments in workers' comp, but we never see them. So what happens is the respondents go in, and they rebut. But it's not a presumption they're rebutting. They're rebutting a burden of proof. What they're saying is, we've overcome your presentation of proof to show that this wasn't work-related, because you have a burden of proof. Now the burden of proof is shifted. But this is it's a greater shift because the legislature has said these types of cancers are caused by the exposure. And what does Dr. Waxman say? He says, wait a second. There's nobody that can tell you about those amounts. And nobody knows what chemicals were in Jeff Crist's blood for the 27 some odd years that he was a firefighter. Okay? So if you're going to say that all you have to prove is maybe that you don't know what the cause of cancer was, that shit is settled. The legislature says these cancers were caused by work as a firefighter. You can overcome it, but you have to have more than just speculation. That's our position. And, you know, that's what we argue to ICAP. I know I'm running low, but, you know, I don't want you to feel I'm trying to ignore your question.
No, I understand what you're saying. I gather your answer really focuses as much on the evidence that actually was presented in this case as
part of what has been presented or wasn't presented in this case. And are we confronting similar cases all the time? Now, of course, they're not in evidence here, but I'll just tell you, it's a practical matter. The cities are not happy. The fire districts are not happy with this. The National League of Cities has put together a report showing that this is all hokum. But, you know, there are 14 or 15 other states. North Dakota probably has the clearest law on all this stuff. At least that's what I could find. Because when I looked at California law, it seemed to be all over the place. Seattle maybe, and Washington maybe. But, you know, reality is the legislatures here have decided to protect firefighters. Is it a reaction or a response to 9/11? Well, yeah, it's a political response, and it's a social response.
There's no doubt that they've created the presumption. I mean, I don't think that's in dispute here. The question then for me becomes, what does it take to rebut the presumption? And the difficulty here is, it would seem that the evidence that was presented by the employer would always rebut the presumption, and the presumption, in effect, would be eviscerated. Nonetheless, the way that the legislature has written the rebuttal portion of it, it says that the cancer shall not be deemed to result from the employment if the employer shows that the condition did not occur on the job. Now, I suppose they could have phrased it two ways. One, more than two, I'm sure. Right. But one way would be occurred from some other exposure, or right, occurred from some exposure other than the job. But right, here they said did not occur on the job. And so the difficulty is that that phrase would seem to open the door to say, here's evidence. It did not occur on the job because medically it could not have.
You see, it says medical evidence. All right, so that's the predicate, right? That's the predicate.
Yeah.
So the question then is it medical evidence that we're scientists and we don't agree with this presumption because it doesn't meet the Bradford Hill test? That's what a lot of Waxman's testimony is about, the Bradford Hill. And our position is that ain't enough. And that's the position of the North Dakota Supreme Court. And I realize we quoted it at length and ad nauseum, but when their logic compels, we want to bring it to your attention. We brought it to the ICAP's attention. That's what it got. They don't reference, by the way. It's interesting. ICAP doesn't reference any etiquette, but sure enough, they had to rely on it. It's that simple. So,
thank you, Mr. O'Toole.
Thank you, Milan. Bye-bye.
Ms. Myers, before you begin, the rebuttal portion of the statute does say medical evidence, and one could take certainly scientific, physiological evidence to be included in that, but one could also, it seems, include medical evidence specific to this person. Can you address that?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. And it dovetails into my comments about counsel's argument that the evidence we presented really wasn't a preponderance of the medical evidence, and that it was just speculation, or that it was just general. Now, if you look at the record, of course, Dr. Damick, Dr. Waxman specifically addressed the facts of this particular case and talked about the particular diagnosis of glioblastoma multiforme and these particular substances. The ALJ accepted that evidence as medical evidence. And I think when the claimant argues that it really wasn't medical evidence, or we really didn't establish a preponderance of the evidence, then we really, as we've said in our briefs, claimant is asking this court to reweigh the conclusions drawn by the ALJ based upon her judgments of credibility, reliability, demeanor, quality of the evidence itself. She found the evidence to be credible medical evidence that was a preponderance of the evidence.
Did your experts examine the firefighter?
No.
Did they examine the firefighter's medical records?
Yes, they did. All of them reviewed those medical records. Interestingly, Dr. Weaver, who was one of the claimant's experts, testified that she actually interviewed Mr. Crist. There was never any evidence that any information from Mr. Crist was relevant or dispositive to the causality issue in this case. There was never any evidence that there was something about the diagnosis that was disputed, for instance. I know the ICAP went on in its brief about how the experts provided by the presented by the employer did not actually examine the claimant, Mr. Crist. There was never any evidence that anything could be gleaned by a physical examination of an individual with brain cancer. It's a diagnosis that is made by MRI, by biopsy, and there was never any question about the specific diagnosis. There was nothing that could be told about exposure, nothing that could be revealed about the nature of exposure by questioning the claimant or by examining him. So that, to me, is not relevant to the issue of medical evidence. And certainly in the world of workers' compensation, we see medical evidence all the time that is related to the medicine of the diagnosis, which is specific medical evidence. That doesn't mean it's not medical evidence.
Counsel, in your view, how did the panel err in its view of the evidence?
The ICAP order really says just two things. It says that we didn't, the employer didn't rebut the presumption, and it says that our evidence was general rather than specific. I think that that leaves us with lots of questions, but, and again, it gets us back to the actual language of the statute, which says nothing about whether the evidence is general or specific, or whether, what, how that evidence should be characterized.
When I read that language, I thought general really essentially meant that the evidence would have undermined the validity of a conclusion that one could presume that these, that this cancer was caused by exposure to things that the firefighter had while he was on the job. You know, in other words, it would be general if the only thing it did was sort of attack the nature of the presumption. And that probably would be insufficient because, notwithstanding however valid that evidence is, we are really stuck with the presumption, aren't we?
Well, Your Honor, we're also stuck with the means of rebutting the presumption.
Oh, and so the question then is, does, if you can explain to me one more time, how your evidence really does rebut the presumption that the impairment occurred on the job?
The evidence from Dr. Waxman showed that there was no way that the causality connection could be made in this case because of the nature of the chemicals to which Mr. Crist was exposed and the nature of his specific diagnosis. Dr. Damick testified that there was no evidence that this particular substance, this list of substances, could have reached Mr. Crist's brain and caused this diagnosis of glioblastoma multiforme. So it was specific with regard to both the diagnosis and the exposure, like any occupational disease case that one finds in workers' compensation.
Appreciate your answer.
Honors, I have just 40 seconds left. I just want to go back again to the argument by claimant that his talk about the policy behind the statute. And once again, we are left with the words of the statute. What the ICAP has said are not ambiguous. We don't need to go to the legislative history, but even if the court finds that those words, those unambiguous words, do not fulfill the purpose of the legislative intent, the court, of course, is not at liberty to reinvent those words. So we ask that the court applies the words as written and affirms the dismissal of the claims of the claimant. Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, thank you both. We've been very fortunate today that we've had three very well-argued cases. Your arguments were quite helpful. This case is now submitted. We will issue an opinion in due course. This concludes.